Local Station Board. WBAI's Local Station Board is the Pacifica Foundation Board, which advises local management and operations. The next meeting of the Local Station Board will be Wednesday, September 9th at 7 p.m. Because of coronavirus precautions and restrictions, the meeting will be a remote access meeting, which will be accessible to the public. It will include an opportunity for public comment. The world challenges us right now with a lot that is negative. The LSB may be discussing WBAI's potential as alternative radio for envisioning positive possibilities. Again, that's Wednesday, September 9th at 7 p.m. The meeting, held through the Zoom remote meeting service, can be accessed by calling in the United States 929-205-6099 and entering the meeting ID 922.457.2995. Once again, that telephone number to call, 929-205-6099. And the meeting ID is 922.457.2995. A link to instructions, including for listening over the web and how to submit written comments, will be available through WBAI's main webpage. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting? No, but why not?
As a result of that war against the working class by the corporate elite, what we have seen is the decimation of working families all across this country, while the wealthiest people and largest corporations have done phenomenally well.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. And what he says is true as well for a little radio station like WBAI, which speaks truth to power. Other public radio stations are funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. They're funded by corporate sponsors. WBAI isn't like that at all. And you know that. You know that we depend on you, our listeners, for our funding. But it's not going so well. Our station manager, Bertol Reimer, says that as WBAI ends its fiscal year 2020, we are again facing the same situation that gave the Koopsters back in the fall an excuse to shut down WBAI. We planned on raising $25,000 per week, every week, with a new system which did not preempt all programming for fund drives, but only some programs on certain hours, alternating each day of the week. But this is not working out very well. We need to raise $50,000 by Sunday, $8,000 per day, and we need you and your support. Please call. Please help us. 516-620-3602. Any amount is well appreciated. Any amount, $5 a week, $5 a month, $50 a year, $25 for a year subscription, $35 for a subscription to WBAI, making you a voting member, giving you a WBAI face mask in white or black, a cotton face mask with the saying, keep free speech radio alive, WBAI on it. Any of these ways or a large contribution, a matching fund would be most helpful. We would appreciate you doing this so much. And we do appreciate our past donors, people who have been giving to WBAI. Remember, unlike other public radio stations, we are totally listener-sponsored, and we need your help. 516-620-3602 is the number to call. We'd like to see phones lighting up right now. 516-620-3602. There are many shows on the air which are your favorite shows. You've told us. I'm Linda Perry, program director here at WBAI. You've told us that you love certain shows on WBAI and some of the new shows that we have, some of the new programs over WBAI. But we need your support. We need to be able to continue broadcasting in these troubled times. Many people have told us that you listen to WBAI and your parents listen to WBAI and your grandparents listen to WBAI. We want your children to be able to listen to a progressive voice in the darkness of media today. So please give us a chance, give us support. We are on an upswing program-wise, but financially, we really need your help.
All
right. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up.
Okay, we're on the air. Figured it out. I think we're getting worse at this week after week. We're going to take an extra couple of minutes because of the delay it took for the station to get a hold of us. It's Off the Hook. We're back after 2 weeks. And welcome. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
What?
Rob T. Firefly. Hang on, I didn't press the right button. That's on me. Rob T. Firefly. You gotta say something, guys.
Good evening.
Okay. Aguila.
Hello.
And Alex. Alex, you just wave. What the hell? You gotta talk, Alex. It's not a TV show.
You think you're on delay or something. I am talking. Good evening, everybody.
Wait, we're on delay? How are we on delay? We're talking to you through a computer right now, so how are we on delay?
Well, delay meaning that there's some latency in the network that's not allowing my communications to get to you effectively. Delay as it's known in radio.
Okay, you sound terrible. I don't know what's going on with the network, but wow, this is, like I say, it's like we're getting worse and worse week after week. Things get slower. People forget how to do things. Maybe if we were on every week, this wouldn't happen. I don't know. Okay, I noticed, Alex, you're on the phone, too. Are you also on a phone call, or are you talking to us somehow?
And I'm trying to multitask here. I got a work call. It's confidential. This is legally privileged. Yeah.
And you're on a work confidential call on the radio. Okay, fine. Whatever. Nothing surprises me anymore. Yeah. Well, it's another exciting week of technology-related stories that we're going to get into. And, well, first of all, an important thing, if you value this kind of broadcasting, you might want to give a call to our special phone number, which I have in front of me. Hang on 1 second. Things are in such disarray. 516-620-3602. It's 3602, right? The program director wrote to me and gave the wrong phone number. See, everyone's getting things wrong. That's not the number. 516-620-3602. That's it, right? Okay. We want to thank people who have become BAI buddies. You might notice what's happening is that we're preempted every few weeks, but then we're on, and we're not doing fundraising because we're always doing fundraising, but not the annoying kind of fundraising where we stop everything and ask for money. Instead, what we do is basically ask people to become BAI buddies. And we've had a number of people do that. We want to thank E in Colorado, Tim in Arlington, Virginia, Matt in Boston, David in Stony Brook, Scotia from Escondido, California. These are all BAI buddies who have signed up in recent days. Marcus from Austin, Texas. Nomad Radio from Louisville, Kentucky. Lawrence from East Longmeadow, Massachusetts. These are all people who said that Off the Hook was their favorite show. You can join them by calling 516-620-3602 and becoming a BAI buddy. Look at this. We also have people who have pledged for other things. Doug from Bloomfield, New Jersey. Patrick from East Greenbush. Kitty from, oh boy, I don't know what this is. Etobicoke on Canada? What is that, a place? Okay. Keith is, wait a minute. It's Etobicoke, Ontario, Canada. That's what it is. Okay, I figured it out. But see, they capitalized the O, but not the N, so it looked like the word on. I'm sorry. Keith from Canada as well, from Toronto. Thanks for your generous donation. So all these people are pledging and are keeping us on the air, as it were. And we value them so very, very much. So please become a BAI buddy. I think if we get another 20 or so BAI buddies, and what a BAI buddy is somebody who makes a certain pledge or a certain payment every month, a small amount, $5, $10, and it's what keeps us going. It really makes a huge difference. If a lot of people do that, it's the equivalent of us basically doing nonstop fundraising for 4 or 5 weeks in a row. So if you can manage that, that small monthly amount, then please do, and you'll keep the radio going without those constant fund drives. 516-620-3602. You can also go to give2wbai.org and pledge that way. And make sure you say that Off the Hook is your favorite show, if it is in fact your favorite show. But again, thank you to everybody for the support. It means so much, especially in these times when everything is just completely messed up. Today we found out the president is a murderer. Well, I mean, some of us already knew. In fact, some of us said it on the air. But boy, are you guys following what's been going on in recent hours?
No.
What's the latest? Because I'm always afraid that whatever I heard most recently has been totally subsumed by some new horror.
Are you talking about, Emmanuel, the fact that the president withheld very serious information and intelligence about the seriousness of the coronavirus and COVID-19 pandemic from the rest of the United States population?
Yeah, I figured that would be the lead story, but apparently there are other things competing for it. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That he knew how dangerous the goddamn pandemic was from the start, and he withheld that information, and over 100,000 people died. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Do you have something else?
Yeah, I thought that might be it.
That's it. You know, you got it.
According to the White House, however, he was just doing what any ordinary leader would do, which was, you know, to down, not necessarily downplay.
That's
just
paternal crap. No.
To not, you know, that you don't want people panicking around the United States about something that could kill them.
What would be alternative to panicking about something that is about to kill them be? Just die? That's what it sounds like.
I hate it. It's this paternal, I know better, I'll take care of you. No, I don't need hand-holding from such an idiot.
Yeah, that's, and I don't think he even believed that himself. So, anyway, I don't want to spend the hour talking about this. I just wanted to, you know, basically put a bookmark here. This is where we are in history. Today is when we found this out. And there's quite a reaction. I'm seeing nonstop reaction to this from all corners. And hopefully, if you're not already awake, this wakes you up and you realize that, yeah, elections have consequences and we are in great danger right now, and that we have to continue to fight the fascism that is taking over our land. There's just no compromising on this. And I think everyone at BAI is committed to that. I think most people in New York City are committed to that. And I sure hope most people in the country are committed to that.
I think you're right. I mean, the attacks, well, I wouldn't say the attacks. I would just say, you know, the information that has been coming out about the president over the last week, today's revelations, I think, were particularly illuminating in terms of his character. But the, you know, what he said about veterans and members of the military who were killed in action, as reported by The Atlantic, is also, you know, just absolutely extraordinary. I feel like it's taken almost 4 years, but people are finally seeing, you know, the true colors of this particular bird that we have in the White House.
Yeah, but Alex, why did it take that? I mean, he's been saying things about Mexicans, about immigrants of all sorts, about poor people, about minorities, about women. He's been desecrating the environment and the economy. But it's not until he attacks the military that people become outraged. I mean, yeah, be outraged, but really, you needed this much to tell you?
But
look, you know, to be fair, I think many of us, probably most of us that, you know, and most of our listeners have been outraged for a very long time right now. But we're starting to, because it's now affecting other demographics of the population who were not as outraged about the outrageous activity that should have outraged them in the past. Now they're outraged about, you know, frankly, really outrageous stuff because it involves the military.
I find that outrageous.
However,
I do.
However, if people are moderately outraged, their outrage has exponentially grown. But if they weren't outraged,
all right, that's it. We broke the record. We just broke the record for saying outraged the maximum number of times in a single hour. Thank you, Gila, for putting us over the top. Continue with your sentence. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Anytime. Absolutely. All I was going to say is that people who were angry are getting more angry, and people who were moved are becoming more moved, but people who are entrenched in his support of his positions and his policies and his business acumen and what have you are really just getting retrenched. And I have seen people I grew up with who were talking about what a wonderful victory for capitalism it's going to be when he gets reelected.
Yeah.
And how much they support him. And I'm terrified, but they're really excited.
Go ahead,
that's
Rob.
Something else that really, that's something else that really drives me nuts about this is, according to what people are saying, Trump has been fully aware of the danger of this since February, and he has people who listen to him. I'm not among those people, but there are so many thousands of people who are, and he could have saved people who like him by coming out and saying, okay, this is serious. Here's how you can protect yourself. Here, it's not a hoax. It's not a magical thing. Like, it's not going to magically be cured. He could have told people who listened to him that that this was serious, and then they might have listened. Then they might have taken it seriously. But as it is, he's putting his own crew in danger.
And to this day, though, this continues. There are rallies going on where people are not observing social distancing, where they're not wearing masks, where Trump is mocking people who wear masks, including Joe Biden. You know, it's not like he delayed things for a little while until we all realized how serious it was and then sort of guided us into the hell that we're living through right now. He's continuing it. He doesn't care.
Not to mention the xenophobic scapegoating of China.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, you know, if you're going to name a virus after the country responsible for spreading it the most, it's the American virus now, for sure.
But seriously, how's that for a global response? I mean, it's pitiful.
It's disgusting. And, you know, we would be back in the studio now if this had been handled correctly. As it is, I don't see when we're going to be back in the studio. I don't see when life is going to resume. We're at a stage now where this thing is just completely out of control. And, you know, we're talking about rushing vaccines to the market, which is another dangerous thing to do that people might jump at out of desperation. So we really have to pool our resources and fix what's going on right now before we can fix everything else that's now broken. It's really scary, upsetting, but I also feel a good sense of community. Just talking to people, hearing what people have to say, and I hope we all kind of share that. I know there are things that not everybody sees eye to eye on, but for now, we have to work together to stop what's going on in this country before it becomes past the point where we can't do anything about it.
I think truly it has reframed the way we look at problems, all of them, big and small, in an entirely new light. And then also how we approach those problems, the kinds of solutions we throw at things. I think these responses and sort of the human behavioral stuff that's coming alongside the actual news and story that is this pandemic are really a reason for pause for a lot of people, just to reassess their approach to the issue and then how to approach it.
There's an interesting story on Vice.com that I thought was worthy of rebroadcasting here, written by Casey Johnston. The article published in The Atlantic pointed out that Americans absolutely suck at being contact traced for coronavirus so far. There are a number of reasons given. There are too many cases, test results take too long, people don't trust the government. And after this completely botched handling of a pandemic where the government has allowed nearly 200,000 people to die, who would? But we dug this contact tracing by phone grave long ago when we allowed our phone system to be ruined by spam calls. Yeah, contact tracing, we're told here in our destitute country, works beautifully in Europe, where people dutifully hand out their phone numbers to businesses they visit and then dutifully answer the phone when they are contacted about any potential risk from other people they might have come into contact with. I noticed that when I'm in Europe. I wonder if I'll ever be in Europe again. But when I've been in Europe, I notice people answer the phone when it rings. You know, it's generally something relevant. People in Europe can safely give out their phone numbers and safely answer the phone because the European Union prohibits calling people to solicit services without their explicit consent. Imagine that. In South Korea, it's a different system. While telemarketing and robocalls are a problem there, the contact tracing system works largely by text message. That's according to a reported piece from The New Yorker back in April. Both contact tracing efforts and COVID-19 test results are delivered by text. In the case of test results, they arrive within hours of the test administration. Another delightful contrast to the U.S., where test results throughout most of the country take around a week to arrive, which makes them worthless because your situation may very well have changed within a week. Here in the U.S., meanwhile, people almost never answer the phone when an unknown caller rings, and for good reason. As of 2018, roughly 30% of all cell phone calls in the United States were spam, which can be annoying at best and actively dangerous at worst. Also can be expensive if you have the wrong plan. That number was up from only 3.7% in 2017. Imagine that. 3.7% of all cellular phone calls were spam in 2017. 3.7%. 1 year later, 30%. Wow. I wonder what it is now. Texting could actually work a bit better in terms of getting people to respond, but still there remains the issue of trust, that the person who is contacting you is who they say they are. Without a government that could even figure out how to get its own phone number to reliably show up as say, New York Health Department instead of spam risk when it reaches out to people, we're not positioned super well to build trust. And even then, new developments in scamming technology allow for scammers to spoof the numbers of anyone, meaning that even that wouldn't be foolproof. So until the United States takes its scam and spam call problem seriously, we're probably going to be in the contact tracing dark ages for a very, very long time. Again, that article from Casey Johnston, Vice.com. And yeah, I think it hits the nail on the head of what our problems are with the way we set up technology, with the way we think of how phone calls work and how governments work and how contact tracing should work. This could be something that would save a lot of people, but it's just, it doesn't work here.
Yeah. There are so many elements of the modern communication environment in which we depend but are simultaneously really bad at. Society in general is not used to all this level of interconnectivity, and we've been given powerful toys by science and invention and progress, and we sometimes break those toys and it's our own damn fault.
Yeah, I mean, look, I tend to agree with this, and you know, a lot of the good things and the technology that we have is just essentially, you know, been ruined by over commercialization and, you know, bogus sales items. I mean, I think I had three or four robocalls today, two of which were about, you know, my car's warranty, which, you know, is totally crazy because, how many times can your car's warranty, you know, about to expire? You know, all of this stuff is just so low and base what we've allowed to happen without any repercussions to the spammers, to the people that are also not only spammers but scammers,
right,
taking advantage of the elderly. There's so much victimization that happens through the telephone here that people are afraid to answer the damn line. I mean, it is a totally different situation in Europe, and also things are more highly regulated, yet at the same time somehow exponentially cheaper than in the United States. You know, it just seems like it's totally incongruous. But when I lived in London, you know, not only was my internet connectivity so much cheaper than what I paid in New York, but paying for a mobile phone was also a tiny fraction of what you pay in the United States. And so, you know, we've got a hell of a lot, I think, that's broken. And the fact that we have a Republican-led FCC is not going to change any of that for us in the near future.
On that subject, just to scare you even more, Alex, I don't know if you heard Trump's address later, late in the afternoon, of his wish list for the Supreme Court, Ted Cruz. Supreme Court Justice Ted Cruz. Just swirl that around a little bit and see how that comes out. And Tom Cotton, too, I believe. Yeah, it's I'm sorry. I'm affected by all this. It's just too much of the bizarre to try and digest at once.
I mean, wasn't it just literally almost exactly 40? No, it had to be a little bit more than 4 years ago that he was saying terrible things about Ted Cruz's wife, if I recall correctly.
And father.
Right. I mean, this just.
And Ted, too. But it doesn't matter.
I just wanted to...
Are you guys feeling at all just, you know, particularly fatigued by any of this? I mean, the last couple of days, I have to say, I've been feeling just tired from the work-from-home situation, the constant barrage of bad news, information, school delays, closings, all this. Like, I feel like it's starting to get to me a little bit. I'm tired.
Yeah, I think we're all pretty tired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of up and down. I have, like, it comes in waves. I don't know. I get in various moods. But regarding one of the aspects of that predatory business that these industries and sort of basically all of the underbrush, shall we say, that comes up in the forest of capitalism, that allows this, does facilitate a lot of fraud. Straight up, like, it can be misleading and maybe there's a business there, but it's so fake, it's so flimsy, and we just sort of allow this to flourish because we want to say, oh, well, this is the marketplace. And years and decades of Republican deregulation has made it so that these revenue streams, and this is my real point, are just another option for the greed of the large trees in that forest of capitalism. And in this case, we know the telephone company, even when they get dollars allocated to, like, broadband, they don't actually invest it. They just skim off as much as they can. They change the planning and the kinds of structure of people's service to cram less quality calls. And then they have these other little optional streams of revenue that, like, scammers that buy bulk calling abilities. And it all goes back in a lot of ways to greed. We're just promoting that as though there are no consequences, or that subjecting the entirety of the consumer population to that is okay and allowed.
Yeah, and we come to expect it too. We adjust our lives to fit the scammers and the spammers, rather than the other way around, and it's unacceptable. But I think we've stopped realizing that it is unacceptable. We just got this email. It's addressed to me. Laurie mentioned to me that you called earlier while I was doing an orientation. Feel free to contact me to discuss our regional tractor division. I've attached some information for your review. Thank you, and look forward to speaking with you soon. What kind of spam is this? This is a guy, Phil Wiener from Ohio, contacting me about regional tractors, I don't even know how to say it. Regional tractor division. I should just call and follow up on this and get some tractors out of it.
It was absolutely epic. It was so. That email came actually to the show list.
You all saw this then.
We all got it.
But it's addressed to me. It's addressed to me by name.
I know. So yesterday afternoon, I'm sitting over in my workspace in our apartment, and Rob is sitting over in his workspace in our apartment, and I began laughing hysterically, like loudly, head back, whole business. And he said, "What's going on?" I said, "You need to see this email we just got. It is the single strangest piece of spam I've ever seen." Like, and then I was looking at the attachments, which I know is not really a safe thing to do, but I did it. And, yeah, do you want to drive a truck?
So those attachments were actually tractor related?
This appears to be tractor trailer related. This appears to be some sort of, like, long distance truck driving concern.
Did I express an interest in this at some point? Maybe I did call this guy.
If you want to take the open road.
Well, I would love to drive a tractor trailer. I really would.
We've actually been kicking around getting our CDLs.
Look, long haul truckers have long been my heroes because they move things around and they get things done.
And there's so many different large trucks you could drive, and they are a lot more involved. They're just an interesting, distinct piece of transportation. It's always intrigued us.
And they listen to the radio, too. They might not always listen to good radio, but they do listen to the radio. So any long-haul truckers listening to us right now. I don't know if they still use a CB. Do people still use CB radios? I guess maybe they do.
Yes, they do.
They do.
Oh, okay.
Yes, they do.
Go ahead, Gayla.
Okay, yeah. Can we take it back for a second? Because I signed us up for a service called Nomo Robo. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with Nomo Robo.
That's us as in this household, not
us
as
in this household. This
I was going to say, how dare you? But okay,
Nomo Robo.
Nomo Robo. I just also enjoy saying Nomo Robo. So we were busy. We still have a landline, which is, it's through the cable company, but it's a landline. And we were getting a lot of spam calls. So I signed up for this service called Nomo Robo. And basically what it does is it rings your house in this like database in tandem. It simultaneously rings there. And if the number on your caller ID is on this like known database of scammers, it cuts it off. But I was like, great, this is great. We're going to get fewer junk calls. But at the same time, the privacy implications of it are staggering. Mm-hmm. And I am torn, frankly, because we haven't gotten, Chinese voicemail in like a week. But
which was formerly a daily occurrence.
Have you ever taken the time to actually translate those Chinese voicemails? Because they're very good opportunities.
All
right, you're lost. You're lost, but...
The end result, though, is that some machine somewhere has a log of every call that comes into our home.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that.
It's decided that some of the calls we get are legit, and I'm glad they haven't decided, my mother is a scammer. But,
well, okay, wait, hold on a second. Can you add your mother to the scammer list somehow? How does that list get generated?
I don't know. Well, you can actually, once you're signed up, then you can go in, and if it missed one, you can say, hey, you missed one, add this to your scammer list, or whitelist this one.
I can just see it now. Ma, I swear to God, you call me one more time, I'm putting you on that scammer list, you won't be able to call anybody. Yeah, you have to go out and change your phone number.
Anybody who's got Nomo Robo. It is fun to say. But that was, I was torn between the convenience and what it means in a broader sense, which I think is probably the decisions, a lot of the decisions that we're making now.
Yeah. I just want to add that you're put in that position because the telephone company wants the revenue stream. And it's their greed. They're passing that along to you, and you're put in that predicament. Mm-hmm. And then you have to come up with giving away something in order to mitigate something that they could do at the network level in their systems and with probably a wide range and a lot more power and impact, not power, than the average consumer. But yet, because they favored this kind of law and we've completely abandoned regulation as an evil boogeyman, we have this. We have to face those kinds of surveillance issues and then come up with other solutions and even pay for a service, et cetera.
And, of course, there's the Do Not Call registry, which we should probably mention. I believe it's donotcall.gov that you register. It's pretty useless because what that does is that adds your number to a database. Guess what? That database is shared with telemarketers. So you're on a list of people you really shouldn't call, but you're on that list. And I was on that list for a while. I got lots of calls. You're supposed to report every time somebody calls that isn't supposed to call you. And there are plenty of instances where you may think you're not supposed to be called, where they have every right to call you. For instance, a politician can call you anytime with robocalls. And if you use Grubhub or something, which a lot of people have to do, are forced to in this day and age, well, now you have a business relationship with them. They can call you. They can text you. They do all the time. So there are instances where you can't get out of it. But if somebody does call you and they're not supposed to, yeah, you report it. Nothing happens. They call you again. You report it. Nothing happens. If the day ever comes where they're charged with something, they might have to pay a fine. Do you get any of that? No, you get nothing. All you get is the fun of having to report somebody over and over again and get really frustrated because you already gave your number out to all these telemarketers. It's useless. It doesn't do any good.
You know, one thing we're always going on about is like how much not to be that person who's like shaking a cane at a cloud and saying this is, you know, things used to be so much better, but we have become accustomed to things getting worse and worse and worse over time, and just accepting that that's the way it has to be now. And that sort of fatigue is what we were talking about before. It's the same thing that's happening on a grander scale with just the trauma and challenges to our mental health that every person on this planet is suffering at the moment. And it's very easy to just get tired and just decide this battle isn't worth fighting anymore.
You know,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, Gail, go ahead.
I'm sorry. So I got a notification on my phone earlier today. That we're going to be able to, New York City is going back to restaurant dine-in at the end of the month.
25%.
Because apparently 25%, but still, do you want to go eat in a restaurant? I mean, it's this idea of we're done with this now. We're done with this and we can't do it anymore. And what is the point where we as a society throw our hands back up and say things are going to go back to normal because I'm deciding they're going back to normal now, despite whatever might be going on in the broader world?
Well, I think a victory or two might actually be helpful, where people feel like things are now going to change. I think that's going to do a world of good. And after that, actually progress, real progress on combating the disease and eventually eliminating it. It will end at some point. It has to. And I hope at that point we remember how to be happy, remember how to have fun, how to congregate in large crowds of people, because those are good things. And I don't think anybody out there wants those things to go away. It's funny how you see various political parties accusing other people of wanting the economy to fall apart. Why would anybody want that? Why would anybody want to end school? Well, I know why people want to end school, but, you know, why would people want to end the concept of it, or businesses, or all the things that we all miss, that we all want to have? One thing that I can't really wrap my head around, maybe you guys can help me with this. There's a bowling alley out here that went out of business because of the pandemic. Now, I don't understand why any business has to shut down because of this. The reason, okay, you have to pay rent, you have to pay utilities. Why? Why do you have to keep paying rent if you don't have a business? Why do you have to keep paying utilities if the utilities aren't serving you? Why can't these things be suspended so that everybody feels the pain equally? You got to pay the landlord? Why? Why do you have to pay the landlord? Because he has to pay taxes? Why? Why does he have to pay taxes? He's not getting services. This scenario where the little guy always has to pay for everything, whereas the people on the very top, they don't have to pay anything. These massive chain stores, they're bemoaning the fact, and some of them have said, we're never going to open in New York City again because it's just too hard for us. They have stopped paying rent. They haven't been paying rent for months on their massive stores. So if they do this, why can't the people who are further down do the exact same thing? So this bowling alley is shut down now. What I don't understand is, it's a bowling alley. What's to stop me from, when the pandemic is finished, walking in there and saying, hey, want to start a bowling alley here in this bowling alley-shaped building? what is the difference between that and the person who ran the bowling alley being suspended for a few months until it's safe to reopen again, and then just starting from where he stopped? I know I'm being naive, because I usually am, but how much am I missing the mark here? Why do businesses have to shut down permanently because of this? Alex?
Well, look, you know, it's an issue of contract law here. You have a when you are a commercial tenant in a building, you sign a contract, pay a certain amount of rental per month to have access to that property, you know, without interference from your landlord. And that's a contract that you sign that obligates you to pay regardless of whether or not there is a health crisis. You may have certain language in your contract that exempts you from paying and allows you to breach that contract because of force majeure or an act of God. And whether or not the pandemic would fit into that is another thing. But I think that's possibly why we are seeing and have seen so many coronavirus-related domain names that relate to lawyers and law firms, because there are so many legal issues arising out of this pandemic because of people doing the exact same thing that you were suggesting, Emmanuel. Now, when it comes to a place like a commercial tenant, like a bowling alley, right, like you had mentioned, you know, when you break that lease, there's some serious consequences for that business because they may be on the hook for the rest of that lease anyhow. But if it's a corporate entity, they're not going to be able to pay. So the landlord's just going to be out of the money until they can find a new tenant. But it's the whole structure of the system, I think, that really just stinks in a way, right? Because it allows landlords to own property like this, to use the last known rental value that they had from a tenant to acquire other loans or to secure other properties that they're buying. Right. So sometimes there's an incentive to not have a tenant in your property because it allows you to further expand your empire.
Exactly. Look at the East Village. East Village, all the vacant stores. Why don't they simply rent at a lower price because of what you say? Because they can expand their empire by having a bunch of vacant storefronts.
And the problem here, too, is systemic. And this is here where I think we can sort of tie it back to the hacker community here, because what we're dealing with is a broken system in that the laws that regulate landlords and tenants are not promulgated by county authorities or city authorities. They're not promulgated by the city council in New York City so that, you know, the East Village can be saved when there's a massive pandemic like this and people are just going out of business willy-nilly. They come from Albany. You know, this is where landlord-tenant law has, you know, literally since the 18th century been passed. And Albany doesn't want to abdicate its authority to regulate how landlords treat their tenants and how tenants are obligated to their landlords because, they think there'll be a major disparity in how New York City does it as opposed to how Albany does it as opposed to Rochester does it. But you know what? That's probably a good thing. Local control over rental laws is probably a damn good thing, and it's exactly what we need in New York City to save this economy.
Well, either local or uniform throughout the entire nation, because in other countries, people are being paid even though they're not working. People are having their rents subsidized. They're not suffering as much as they're suffering here. And I think this is the time where you need government to be there. That is what government is for, to step in and help out when there's a disaster going on. And there's a disaster going on. I know a lot of us don't want it to be going on, but it's going on. Look around. And this is when we need to turn to those people that we elected to actually do their job and help get us through this. I don't think there's any other way around it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I agree with you there. And, you know, government to a certain extent has always, you know, been some sort of, you know, safety net. You know, you look back to horrible economic times and the government provided jobs. You have, you know, the, back to FDR is, I guess, a perfect example of all this. And we do need something like that right now. But look, it's on the right and the left here. I think that there is just a failure of leadership on both sides of the aisle here. And I think, you know, we've always been critical of the left when the left deserves to be critical. And I think that, you know, we need real leadership here. We need people that are good at governing, not just good at campaigning. Being great on Twitter and social media is a hell of a lot different than being a good legislator that takes care of your constituents.
Absolutely. Hey, what happened to Robin Gila? What happened, Kyle?
I had some problems.
Well, there was this Darth Vader noise coming from there. You muted them, and it went away. But I didn't mean for them to go away permanently.
Yeah, I don't know how to make it go back.
Oh boy! Oh, there they are. Okay, you guys still with us?
I think
we're here
with you.
Yeah. Do you sound like Darth Vader?
Well, there was like a mechanical lung type sound that we and when we muted you, it went away when Alex was talking.
Oh.
I tried to undo it. I think you had the control or something after I muted it. But
did you have something to say? All right, I'm going to guess you did. Okay.
She should have put our iron lung in the corner. But.
all right, here's a letter from another listener. Number of listeners or HOPE attendees in Wyoming is unclear. We mentioned Wyoming a couple of weeks ago, if you recall, because the Republicans forgot to count Wyoming. They were counting up their votes. Since moving here to Wyoming from an East Coast Commonwealth, I haven't found another hacker or a privacy enthusiast. But no, there is at least one listener here. Thanks, Hack5190. For writing in and letting us know that there is at least one listener in Wyoming. I always assume there's at least one listener in pretty much every state. Did you guys hear this story? Amazon drivers are hanging smartphones in trees to get more. Okay.
What was that about?
A strange phenomenon has emerged near Amazon.com Inc. delivery stations and Whole Foods stores in the Chicago suburbs. Smartphones dangling from trees. Now, they don't grow there naturally. They're put there. Contract delivery drivers are placing them there to get a jump on rivals seeking orders. That's according to people who are familiar with the matter. Someone places several devices in a tree located close to the station where deliveries originate. Drivers in on the plot then sync their own phones with the ones in the tree, and they wait nearby for an order pickup. The reason for the odd placement, according to experts and people with direct knowledge of Amazon's operations, is to take advantage of the handset's proximity to the station, combined with software that constantly monitors Amazon's dispatch network to get a split-second jump on competing drivers. That drivers resort to such extreme methods is emblematic of the ferocious competition for work in a pandemic-ravaged U.S. economy suffering from double-digit unemployment. Much the way milliseconds can mean millions to hedge funds using robo-traders, a smartphone perched in a tree can be the key to getting a $15 delivery route before someone else. That story from Bloomberg. We live in some pathetic times, I gotta say.
So weak. So weak.
Has anyone here ever been an Amazon driver? I was kind of curious what it must be like, you know, to deliver packages. But I don't think any of us have ever done that, have we?
I can't say I have, although I've also never hung a smartphone in a tree. So, you know, if I were that kind of clever, maybe I could drive for Amazon. I don't know. If I learned how to drive.
Alex, nothing?
I think it's interesting. No, I mean, I have not been a commercial driver of any sort. I've never delivered pizzas. I've never delivered anything, to be honest with you. You did mention a profession that I did engage in briefly when I was younger, earlier in the show. That would be telemarketing. That was kind of interesting, being a phone freak and a telemarketer.
Yeah, I did that too. I did that too for about 2 days. It was fascinating, and I figured I had to hack the phone system too at the same time.
I believe it. I mean, these were days when literally we were calling people from photocopied pages of the phone book. Like that was our list,
right?
Of telemarketers. And I was selling chimney sweeps. And you got fired if you didn't make a sale in 3 days. So, what we would do to scan the system was, you know, call somebody who's your friend, and they would set up a chimney sweep and then cancel it the week that it was supposed to happen, and you got another couple of days of employment out of it. But, you know, that was a disaster, that job. It just seemed like such an abuse of the system. But to go back to it, to the phones hanging in the trees, I mean, look, desperate times call for desperate measures. People are willing to do these crazy things to make $15. It's a very sad commentary on the state of our economy that people have to do this to make a living.
Well,
and that it's so competitive.
Can I just say, desperate times calling for desperate measures? I desperately need a new phone. So can I drive by Amazon and just have my pick from various trees of the latest model of phone? And just, I mean, is somebody watching these things?
Yeah,
you can pick one, but only if it's an Apple phone.
Yeah, very, very funny, Rob. Very
just
funny.
Hit the mute button. Hit the mute button on Rob. Yeah, that's.
I can't.
We don't tolerate that
it.
Kind of thing, Rob.
I can't find it.
Yeah, you know the rules.
Where is
you know
it?
The rules. You know, can I say something? Has anybody ordered something from Amazon recently? It's okay. You can confess. You can say, I did. I have. That's how I'm able to say what I'm about to say.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed you get emails telling you that your item is either on the way or has arrived?
Occasionally.
Okay. Yeah. Do you notice those emails don't mention what it is that you're getting anymore? They stop doing that. And the reason they stop doing that is because Gmail is reading your mail and sending you competing offers for products that you're buying. And Amazon caught wind of that and doesn't want the competition. So now they're just saying, hey, your item will be, and you have to figure out what the item is by matching maybe the price or something like that. But it's really inconvenient for the consumer because, you know, if you're going to send me a notice saying something is here, kind of like to know what that something is rather than have to go back through my transactions to figure out what it is.
However, they also do the same thing, though. I have a Chrome extension on my computer called the Amazon Assistant, which means I can add things from whatever. Anytime I look up anything that is any kind of product, the Amazon Assistant gives me prices for that at Amazon, whatever it is that I might be looking up. So the fact that they're willing to do it but not have it done to them is fascinating to me.
Not surprising, though.
Not surprising, but fascinating.
I just, yeah, my heart goes out to the workers driving and that need this kind of income desperately and are piecing together some kind of living with this as such an impersonal activity. And perhaps many people enjoy it. Perhaps maybe a couple people enjoy it, or they're like retired, or I don't know what instance this would be a fun thing to be doing, driving around delivering people's stuff. And I'm sure economically for Amazon, this is a great business model. But I fear it's sort of addictive, the competition and stuff, that people aren't, they're just barely getting by enough to play the game again, you know, and it's sort of like they're rolling the dice to see if they can get work doing crazy stuff like this. But then again, I guess it's innovation, but it's a strange sign of the times.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I feel like it's the delivery drivers for Amazon and similar that have been keeping this, you know, this country, this state, this planet, whatever, running through this pandemic when none of us have been able to leave our homes except for the people who are keeping it all running. And the fact that, like, some of the most essential people that any of us have dealt with on a commercial level are the ones getting paid among the lowest rungs to the point where they have to, you know, use tricks like this to get an extra $15 call or what have you. And the fact that it's worth it enough to them to spend however much money it takes to get a smartphone you can hang up a tree and have it continue to work and weather the weather and all that. And still, like, they're reduced to having to scrape by with this sort of trick. You would think, like, the people who have been keeping the blood running through the veins of this country would have maybe been compensated appropriately for that. But that doesn't work for the people running the businesses.
Well, folks, we're into our last couple of minutes. Any final words for people? I know school is beginning, and a lot of people are filled with trepidation as far as whether or not they should send their kids to school. It's definitely a strange time where we're going to find out in the weeks ahead if we're turning the corner or not. And with outbreaks at college campuses being a barometer of what we might be in for in future weeks, I can't say I'm very optimistic about it. Alex, yes, we can't hear you. Wave your hand. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was trying to unmute myself and simultaneously illuminate myself.
You have 1 minute.
Yeah. Look, I'm going through the same thing right now and trying to determine whether or not we send my eldest son back to school. And, you know, it goes back to something that Gila had mentioned earlier today, too. I mean, we are messing around with so many variables, especially in New York City, reopening indoor seating in restaurants right around the same time that kids are going back to school. It all just seems like there are far too many variables being mucked about with in a way that we are not going to be able to track what's the effect of any one particular change on the city when it comes to this pandemic? It makes me very hesitant to send my son back to school, because what we are thrusting our children into right now is definitely an experiment. And we don't know how it's going to go. And we know that bureaucrats and administrators are in charge of it. It doesn't give me a great amount of confidence.
All right, we're going to leave it at that. I want to thank you guys for being a part of the show. Sorry for the rough start. Hopefully next week we'll get it right. We will be back. You can write to us, OTH at 2600.com. And until next time, stay safe. Good night.
The year is 2020, the number. Another summer, get down. Sound of the funky drummer. Music in your heart, cause I know you got soul.
The information age got them seeing what's really wrong with these racist days. I honor the strong and pity the weak. Your thoughts run your life, be careful what you think. Haiti beat France in century 17. Salute Toussaint and Dessalines. And I do love France, know what I mean? It's a system I'm talking, nobody's agreeing. They say it's suicide when dead bodies are swinging. Cowards are hunting black men, that's what I'm seeing. How many toasters have been burnt down? And once Central Park was a thriving black town. Yo, Chuck, I'm fighting the power right now. Thanks to you, Flavor, P.E., putting it down. Putting your life on the line so I can rap now. The next generation still singing, fight the power.
Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power! Fight the power! Fight the power! We got the fight the power!
Police think they Wayne, 6ix9ine over the law. Yeah. Wanna give a short six, but we really need a long. To the boys in the hood, that's some bullets and batons. From boys in the hood, triple K's on their arms. Four fingers on my palm, screaming fight, fight. Change the policy, defund, buy back our property. Yeah. You love Black Panther, but not Fred Hampton. Oh. Word to the Howards and the Aggies and the Hamptons. Yeah. Won't book us, I'm Booker. T. Washington, George Kilmore, 20. Think about it. That's 2,000 pennies. The value black life, the cost of going to Wendy's for a four-quarter burger. Ended in murder. Fight for Brianna in the pain of her mama. Gotta fight.
Fight the power. 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 Fight the power.
Yeah, generations is how long we've been at war. Revolution on our platform. You break a man's mind and it's back. Your solidarity is what I'm wearing all black for. For comrades who don't fought without me, it's not to try and change our thoughts about me or to redirect your reports about me. Here, white people, you should take a course about me. Cause is it the long endless four finger ring? The sciences of the arts, the songs we can sing. I really wanna know why y'all so scared. Probably cause the promised land we are. Almost there, but look, I think the images that fuel my youth, interviews by Craig Hodges and Abdul Raouf, examples like Olympic black power salutes and Panther troops, I saw as I pursued my truth, if racism is a cancer, black thoughts the answer, gotta get up off the back porch, emancipate your mind, get your body back from rest, and all black hands up for the anthem.
Fight the power, fight the power.
Yo, check this out, man.
Bring that beat back,
bring
man.
Bring that beat back.
Two, three, four, hit it.
People stronger than this evil, smashing your power structure. Melanin Royal Regal, system designed to kill enough.
Smile while your heart is breaking. Smile even though it's aching. When there are clouds in the sky.
Lady Gaga with Smile, a necessary song for our time, because here we are in the midst of troubling events, the protests over police brutality in our city, the killing of George Floyd, racism and fundamental inequality, and the social distancing and masks and washing our hands to slow the spread of COVID-19. Through all this, WBAI listeners are coming through to support this non-commercial Pacifica radio station, broadcasting locally at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. thanks to contributors David in Burlington, New Jersey, Eleanor Burns from Babylon, who's getting David Rothenberg's CD, Fortune in Men's Eyes, Jane in Flushing, who likes Imhotep Gary Bird's Radio GBE, Mary Grambish from Dobbs Ferry. She pledged in support of Dave Kenny's Everything Old is New Again. Thanks for going to your phone. Thanks for calling 516-620-3602 and becoming a member of WBAI. Ed Coffin, thank you so much from Staten Island. You've donated in the name of some of WBAI's programs, Democracy Now!, Advocating for Justice, and Any Monday with David Rothenberg. Wayne McPartland from Pleasantville, New York, thank you for donating in the name of Democracy Now! Anita from Brooklyn, in the name of Con Sabor Latino, and also Francisco Navarro from Yonkers, also a Con Sabor Latino new buddy. Daryl from Huntington and Jonathan in Brooklyn are new WBAI buddies in the name of all WBAI shows. And there's Mike Mandel. He's from Manhattan. He's a new WBAI buddy in the name of the Golden Age of Radio. Thanks, Mike. Janice Leonsis is a new WBAI buddy in the name of Caribbean Voices and Beyond, Isaac Ferguson Show, and Guy Woodward from Inwood. He's a new buddy in the name of David Rothenberg's Any Saturday. LaDonna Ashby from White Plains, thank you for becoming a WBAI buddy in the name of Bob Law's program From the Streets. And Yeprim Sinanian from Queens, you're a new WBAI buddy in the name of Gary Null's show. Thank you so much. Tamara from Woodland Park is now a buddy in the name of all WBAI shows. And Gwendolyn Thomas Steed from the Bronx, thank you for your donation. You say we can thank you on the air, and your favorite show is La Nueva Alternativa Latina. Wayne McPartland from Pleasantville, thank you so much. You ordered 3 WBAI logo face masks in the name of Democracy Now! We thank you so much, new subscribers, new WBAI listener sponsors, new WBAI buddies. You can become a WBAI buddy. Just call 516-620-3602. Say you want to become a WBAI buddy in the name of your favorite show or in the name of all shows. Let us know if we can use your name on the air. Go to the donation website, give to WBAI.org, click on Buddy, and become a WBAI sustaining member for any amount that you can afford per month. It helps WBAI pay the bills and know how much income we can expect to come in to the radio station. This is listener-sponsored WBAI New York. Thank you once again so much.
This is Jesse Eisenberg. You're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, and on the web at WBAI.org.
Welcome back into WBAI 99.5 FM. My name is Tony Bates. This program I'm going to have with me our guest, Loyon Mensah, who is from the World Financial Group. He is a financial advisor, and he's going to talk to us about our finances, as Loyon is a person that advises people in this regard, and we're going to let him tell you about the work that he does today here on WBAI. Loyon, welcome to WBAI New York.
Thank you for having me.
We're very glad to have you here. We want to talk first generally about what it is that you do. What is World Financial Group, and what is it that you do with them?
Great question. I'm actually partnered up with the World Financial Group to provide financial education to everyone throughout the country. It doesn't matter what state, it doesn't matter what city, it doesn't matter what economic situation you're in. We're focused on providing economic and financial education to individuals and providing solutions to allow individuals to take action.
So you work with people now. Generally, when people think of financial planning, it's considered the realm of rich folks or upper middle class folks. You say you do this with people of all income stratas?
Yes. You know how for WBAI, it's called the radio for the 99%?
Right.
Well, our focus is on the 99%.
Uh-huh.
The individuals who typically most individuals within this industry don't focus on. So it's interesting that, you know, between myself and you partnering up to be able to provide this education, how important it is to provide it to that 99%.
And so what you do is take something that's been available to rich people for a very long time and you bring it down to the level of the everyday person. Why is it important for everyday people to plan financially? I mean, what if you make $30,000 a year and you don't really feel like you have any income to invest or to save or whatever? How are those folks affected?
It doesn't matter if you have $10, because once you learn how to handle $10, you can handle $100. Once you learn how to handle $100, you can learn how to handle $1,000, $10,000, $1,000,000. But it all starts with understanding how to handle a dollar. So regardless if you make over $250,000 a year, regardless if you make $50,000 a year or less, the focus is on understanding your money. Because I've learned that there's two things that we use every day. The first is oxygen. Now, as long as you're alive, I don't have to teach you how to breathe. But when it comes to the second thing, which is money, most people, unfortunately, don't have a true grasp or understanding of how money works and how to allow money to work for them. So our focus is to ensure that regardless of how much money someone makes, they learn how to make money work effectively for them.
All right, that's important. So having said that, folks, we're going to be offering you the opportunity today to work with Loyon's group. We're asking today that folks pledge at the $100 level, and we're going to let you sit down for an hour with a professional financial planner who will take you through your own finances and do what is called a financial checkup. And that's to look at what you have, what assets you have, what savings you have, where your investments are, and to maybe rework those, maybe to adjust those so that you can be optimally effective with the money that you bring in for you and your family. So let's talk about you a little bit, Loyon. How did you come to work with World Financial Group?
For me, it all started, and I'm so grateful to have an amazing mom who sacrificed a lot for me and my family. Growing up in the inner city, it's the South Bronx. My mom, she raised four of us. I'm the youngest of four, and I remember, regardless of you know how much money we had, my mother was always fixated and always taught us to two things: one, to surround yourself around people who were smarter than you. And the second was to treat others how you wanted to be treated.
What if you can't find people smarter than you? I'm kidding. Go ahead, Loyon.
There's always someone smarter. And I've learned that if you in a group and you're the smartest person, you probably need to transform the group.
Well, listen, I work at Pacifica. There are plenty brilliant people.
So just having that wisdom and understanding from my mother, you know, it transformed me through high school, through college. And just learning that the understanding was to work hard and to apply the hard work. So I went to school for accounting, came out, I had a great accounting job where I learned a lot about just understanding taxes, understanding how to manage people's financials, understanding how companies work. And for me, that was exciting, but I wanted to be able to transform the lives of others. So I started a firm, a real estate firm, where the focus was to educate individuals on how to purchase real estate throughout New York City, from residential to commercial. That did really well. And then I wanted to do it on a larger scale. So I had the opportunity to work somewhere where I always dreamt of working, which is on Wall Street, for a firm by the name of Morgan Stanley. And at that point, I thought that my life was from that point going to be tremendous because of the fact that Morgan Stanley being one of the largest financial institutions and investment banks in the world. I'm so grateful to Morgan Stanley for the insight and the access that it gave me, because I've learned that in order to fix the problem, in order to fix the solution, you got to first understand how the system works.
Mm.
So working at Morgan Stanley for a little bit over 7 years, I learned the ins and outs of how wealthy people became wealthy. I've learned the ins and outs of how an individual, when it comes to understanding how to effectively minimize your tax burden, how wealthy individuals did that. I understood how an individual could make millions of dollars and it wasn't nothing to them. I learned how...
Wait, can you repeat that? You said you learned how a person can make millions of dollars and there's nothing to it?
Correct. And if I wasn't in that position at that company, I would have never learned that. Although I went to school for accounting and I had financial classes and things of that nature, school just prepared me to have a job. Morgan Stanley prepared me to understand how wealthy people thought and how wealthy people think. So I realized at that point with the information that I received that in order for me to be able to help the masses, I had to be able to connect myself with the right group to be able to do so. So in 2008, something devastating happened. The market crashed. And at that point, I realized that many of the people who were affected the most were the 99%. Individuals who made less than $100,000 a year, individuals who had jobs, individuals who were just working hard to put food on their table for their families. Those are the individuals that their retirement accounts disappeared. Those are the individuals that were financially devastated. While individuals that I worked around, they didn't get affected as much. So then at that point, I said, okay, how is it that the certain wealthy individuals were able to protect their money, but most of our community were not? And it was because of just understanding how money worked. So in order to change the system, I had to partner up with a company that would allow me to do so. So I had the opportunity to meet a mentor who first shared with me the opportunity, which is a World Financial Group. And at that point, he shared that it was a chance for us to be able to educate that 99%, educate the people who needed it the most.
Well, let me jump in here quickly and just go back to the point that you just made, because I think that what you said is impactful and important. And it is that while the knowledge is there for how people become rich, the knowledge is there that people are impacted differently on these financial echelons. You did not learn that knowledge in school. So even though you went to college to study accounting, that information was not made available to you. You had to be around those people making that money to get that experience and learn how this works and why they were protected and how we weren't and our communities were not protected. That's a very important point, because yes, many of us think that we're educated in these matters greatly. And it turns out that I'll give you this example. My sister dated a brother who had done his post-grad work at Yale and Harvard. And he said to me, I was in classes where they brought in top secret documents that they didn't teach at any other schools because they know these are the people that are going to run the world. And so they train them differently and they teach them differently. And I think that's something that you probably found out in that experience, being there with people who had in fact gone to some of those schools and learned in those ways. And that's an important point to keep in mind here, folks, that while we think that we're educated, there's certain levels of knowledge. And from my perspective, it's not meant to be shared with all of us, because there's a group that wants to keep that information to and for themselves. But you were right there in the halls with them and you learned how this works. So you move on. Now what happens next? You meet this mentor, and how does that proceed?
You see, my mentor, his name is Juan Nunez. We started off by just building a nonprofit, right? Building a nonprofit that main core focus was transforming the lives of individuals. And then at that point we realized, because both of us was in the financial industry, that in order for us to greatly impact individuals, it started in their pocket. Because we learned that if you help someone not only make money, but help someone protect their money, help someone grow their money, and help someone leave a legacy, that can transform the lives of individuals all over the country. So it was greatly appreciated that I was able to find a like-minded individual who allowed me to think bigger, who allowed me to do more, but more importantly, to collaborate with individuals that were part of the movement.
So I have another question for you. What is it in you, even with your first business, you said you were training people. What is it in you that wants to train other people into this knowledge? Because that's obviously not something that's come with this World Financial Group. You've been doing this for years. What brings you to that place?
It all comes back to my mother. She taught me to treat others how I wanted to be treated. And I learned that if I learned something...
Don't start quoting scriptures on the air.
I learned that if I learned something, it's only right for me to teach it to other people. You know, information is not meant to be hoarded. Resources is not meant to be hoarded. Resources and information are meant to be shared. So if you share with other people, you provide such an amazing blessing to them that they'll be able to share with other people. So I believe in the philosophy, each one teach one.
And so is that just a philosophy? That's just some good home training, basically, that got you to this place where you want to help other people?
Yes. See, growing up in the South Bronx, growing up in...
I'm scared already. Every time you say South Bronx, I get a little shaky.
Growing up in the projects,
mm-hmm.
you know, I call them the luxury high-rises now because it was an opportunity for me to see everything from a different perspective before I got to the level I am today. So growing up, you know, eating government cheese, you know, being around individuals who, you know, either on welfare. I remember drinking powdered milk, right? Now, mm-hmm. government cheese.
We pronounce it government cheese.
It actually tastes pretty good. You know, not having much.